Chapter 11. The bishop was from the trendier wing of the Church of England, a campaign for orbital disarmament badge prominent on his lapel. His wiry grey hair blew about in the light breeze as he stood at the microphone at the front of the stage. He kept slipping youth culture sound bites into his speech in an effort to hold the younger members of the audience. It sounded bizarre to Julia, like a Victorian toff getting enthusiastic about the lifestyle of New Age communes. Her early years had been spent with the First Salvation Church in Arizona. It was more cult than religion, but she had picked up a basic belief in Christian teachings and ethics which had never been discarded. She found the bishop squirm-inducing, almost making her feel ashamed about her faith. She'd chosen to sit with the rest of the parents in a plastic chair set out on the browning grass of Oakham School's playing fields. The governors had wanted her up on the makeshift wooden platform with the bishop and the other dignitaries, or at least in the front row of the seats. Worried glances had flown like startled sparrows. People were so stupidly sensitive. Did they think she was some sort of mafia princess who kept a black book? There were about 500 parents listening to the speeches and waiting for the prize-giving. The men in grey tropical weave suits, putting a brave face on the bishop's verbal meandering. Wives in light, colourful dresses and elaborate hats, smiling brittlely. She had deliberately fled into the middle of them, seeking anonymity, sitting with Eleanor in the hope she would blend in. Some chance. Between the two of them, she and Eleanor had 6 children to manage. Then there were her 7 hardliner bodyguards. Her party had taken over an entire row of the hard chairs. Eleanor fanned herself with the programme, glancing at her slim Rolex. "He can't go on for much longer," she muttered out of the corner of her mouth. "No, they'll lynch him soon," Julia agreed.
"Will the hardliners do it?"
Matthew, her 8-year-old son, asked eagerly.
"Don't be silly,"
Anita Mandel told him imperiously.
"Auntie Julia was being sarcastic. Don't you know what sarcastic is?"
"Of course,"
Matthew began fiercely. Julia and Eleanor silenced them before the argument got out of hand. Julia put her arm round her son and gave him a hug. He resembled his father so closely, a constant raw nerve reminder of all she was missing. Eleanor took another look at her Rolex.
"They'll be in Monaco now. I didn't want to ask Greg to do this, you know."
"I know," Eleanor said wearily. She put her hand on her belly and shifted uncomfortably in the chair. Julia felt even more guilt crystallizing around her. It was like a prison cell she had to carry round. The bishop sat down to a sharp burst of applause. The headmaster rose and began his introduction to the prizes. Julia gave Daniela a final check over to make sure her uniform was tidy. Daniela had won her year's history prize. Julia was secretly thankful it wasn't the economics prize. That would have been too much like Daniela busting a gut for the subject she believed her mother wanted her to excel in. Not that she would be unhappy if Daniela showed a natural inclination towards the qualities necessary for a career in Event Horizon. She just didn't want the girl to feel constrained. Julia leaned in towards Eleanor.
"It's foolish of me, in a way. I'm relying on Royan as a psychological crutch. Find him, and the world is going to be at rights again. Fat chance. Find him, and we find the flower's origin. Our problems will only just be beginning." "There's no going back now," Eleanor said. "Like it or not, the human race isn't alone anymore."
"Yes, but why all this secrecy? Why not just land on the White House lawn like they do in the channel shows?"
The eco-warriors would laser them dead for bringing 1,000,000 gruesome new varieties of bugs to the planet.
"That's something," Julia said thoughtfully.
"Suppose we never can meet in the flesh, that the risk of bacteriological contamination is too high. All we'll ever be able to do is trade information."
"That's one answer for you, then," Eleanor said.
"They aren't here to trade. They're listening, tapping our data nets and taking the information. The cosmic equivalent of data pirates."
And who better to help them than Royan, Julia thought.
"Yeah, could be. Let's hope it is something that simple."
The marquee was full of parents and pupils, standing with drinks in their hands, talking with animated voices. The sixth formers, who were leaving, were busy swapping addresses, promising faithfully to stay in touch. They had that slightly apprehensive air about them. Julia could remember the feeling herself, the day her grandfather had died, his body at least, and she was the sole legal owner of Event Horizon. The future was loaded with promise, but it was still totally uncharted, dark country. Scary at that age. Eleanor's crack about contamination kept running through her mind.
Surely there must be some risk from unknown germs. Yet Royan had sent her a freshly cut flower. He couldn't have been worried. She took a sip of mineral water from her glass and pretended to study one of the paintings lined up along the back of the marquee, a hummingbird in flight, wings blurred as if in motion. It was part of the school art department's exhibition of work by the pupils. Open channel to self-cause. What did the genetics lab report say about humans picking up a possible infection from the flower?
Virtually zero, NNCore-1 answered. In fact, the problem is reversed. There was no equivalent to our bacteria in the flower. Appendix 15 suggested that symbiotic bacteria, such as the terrestrial nitrogen-fixing rhizobia, have been incorporated into the parent plant's genetic code. And the natural resistance to parasites has evolved and strengthened to such a point where the parasites died off. Wouldn't the parasites evolve in tandem? She asked. If they had, then the laboratory should have found some on the flower. There were none. Ergo, they have died off. So we are a bacteriological threat to the aliens? Possibly. There are three options. One, that contact with us would be extremely dangerous for them, that they will have no immunity to our primitive diseases. Two, their immune systems are so advanced that our germs and bacteria will be no threat at all. Three, that our respective biochemistry is so different that there can be no cross-infection. However, given that the flower's cell composition was so similar to terrestrial cells, for example, the inclusion of cellulose and lignin in the cell membrane, the third option is the least likely. So, even if full contact is established, we may not be able to meet. Insufficient data, you know that, NNCore 2 chided. Yes, sorry. I just hate this floundering around in the dark. We know, remember? Two of you do, she countered, teasing.
They know, Juliet, but I care.
Thank you, Grandpa. We have some good news for you, NNCore 2 said. Please, I could do with some. Greg has discovered the name of the courier, a Charlotte Diane Fielder. She is one of Dmitri Baronsky's girls. Baronsky?
Julian knew the name, his operation, but he was very second-rate. Or rather, he made sure he stayed second-rate. Always targeting the idle rich and society figures, never doing anything that would bring a combinate security division down on him. A man who'd found his niche, feeding off parasites.
This is slightly out of his league, isn't it? Yes, if he is involved. Charlotte Fielder has been lifted from Monaco, and it was a very professional deal. Greg suggested that the same people who took a sample of the flower are now holding Fielder. Where is he now? She asked. On his way back to Monaco's airport. He is going to visit Baronsky to see if he knows Fielder's current whereabouts. Okay. Keep monitoring the situation.
Marry me, an American voice said. Marry me, and let me take you away from all this. Julia turned from the hummingbird to see Clifford Jepson standing at her side, grinning ingratiatingly. The president of Globecast was in his 40s, with a round, berry-brown face, thick black hair combed back, Channel Newsman smile. She knew it was all a forgery, cosmetic face and hormone hair. Like Julia, Clifford Jepson had inherited his position, and Globecast had nearly doubled its share price in the 8 years since he'd been its president. He also carried on his father's underclass arms trading, which was less welcome news. Julia had used him to supply the Trinities, and she'd questioned the wisdom ever since. She really liked his father, her Uncle Horace, but Clifford Jepson seemed to think that it was a friendship which he'd inherited along with Globecast. He hadn't, but his position made him just equal enough to talk without being stilted. Julia glanced round and saw Melanie Jepson talking to the headmaster. She was a beautiful woman, early 20s, blonde hair so fine it was almost white, a spectacular figure.
You've got it all wrong, Clifford, she said dryly. Middle-aged businessmen with midlife crises are supposed to leave frumpish old wives for dazzling young actresses, not the other way round.
Nothing frumpish about you, Julia. You know I've always held a torch for you.
Spare me. You'll be calling me a real woman next.
He looked at the hummingbird painting. Not bad. Sharpen up the colours, add some life to the eyes. Could be the makings of a decent artist there. Nice to see the old forms being adhered to. Kids these days, all they do is talk to their graphic simulators.
Bloody hell, crook and art critic. Clifford, what are you doing here?
He waved his glass in the direction of his wife. Getting the kids down for entry. I'm based in Europe more often than not these days,
So we thought they could board over here, give them a chance of some permanency in their lives. Trouble is, the entrance list for this place is getting kind of full these days. Can't think why. That was another aspect of life Julia didn't enjoy. She'd chosen Oakham School because it was good, and near Willem, and Greg and Eleanor sent their children to it. Daniela and Matthew wouldn't be friendless when they arrived, nor would they have to board, a notion she couldn't bear. The arrangement had been confidential, but within a week of Daniela starting, every entry place for the next 10 years had been booked solid. Rumour had it that places for Matthew's year had been traded for over €250,000.
"Clifford, Sonny's only 2, she said.
20 months, and every bit as pretty as her mom.
Oh, well, I wish you luck. It's a good school. Daniela and Matthew enjoy it here.
She walked on to the next painting, a rusting petrol-driven car with a Coke bottle growing out of its roof. A couple of parents were engrossed with it. The woman nudged her husband, who looked up, and gave a start when he saw Julia. She gave them a flicker of a smile. Julia, I was being serious about us.
Why couldn't he take the hint? I'm a mother with 2 children, remember?
You're a single parent, who's been alone for 8 months. His face was sober.
What do you know about it?
That he's a fool? That he won't be coming back?
He will.
Face it, Julia. 8 months.
8 months or 8 years, it makes no difference to me. I'll wait.
Clifford Jepson gulped down the remainder of his drink. When she looked closely, she saw he was strangely apprehensive, almost frightened.
Can we talk? He asked.
Not if you're going to make any more indecent proposals.
It's important, Julia.
The last thing she wanted was to talk shop. Oliver, Anita, and Richie had pulled Eleanor away to see the exhibitions various departments were staging. Matthew and his bodyguard had gone with them. Daniela and Christine were part of a big group of girls in a corner of the marquee, Daniela's bodyguard wearing a tired, tolerant expression.
5 minutes, she said.
The sports field was almost deserted. A group of school maintenance staff had already started to dismantle the stage. 10 boys were stacking up the chairs under the supervision of a master. Ahead of her, the First Eleven's cricket square was a bright strip of emerald, standing out from the rest of the field's parched grass. Over to one side, the scoreboard was still showing the result of the last match. It was one of the old-fashioned affairs, a small boxy pavilion dating from the last century, with junior boys scurrying about inside, changing the numbers round. Matthew had to explain how it worked the first time she and Royan came to watch a match. She was amazed at the primitiveness of it. The scorer even used a big paper ledger to keep the runs in. Royan, of course, had loved the idea. It had been a good afternoon, she remembered. After the match, they'd taken Matthew, Daniela, and some of their friends to have tea at a cafe in the town. A big noisy party, where the children had all eaten too much cake. None of them cared who she was. Julia sat on one of the wooden seats dotted around the pitch's boundary line, tugging the brim of her hat down against the glare. The air was dusty, tickling the back of her throat. Clifford Jepson sat beside her, grimacing at the stains of ancient bird droppings on the cracked wood. A line of their bodyguards had fanned out behind them to form a phalanx against casual intrusion by any of the other parents.
"Marriage was only half the proposition," he said. "It's a start, an opening to something much bigger, grander."
"Merging Event Horizon and Globecast, so our children could take over the world. No, thank you, Clifford. You forget I could buy Globecast if I really wanted to." His PR smile turned tight.
"Will you hear me out? I'm not talking about Globecast. Right now, I'm holding something that's going to grow and grow. It's big, Julia. The biggest. I'm offering you a partnership.
Open channel to self-cause. I think you three had better listen to this." "A partnership in what?" she asked.
"Something new. Something explosive. It's a whole new industry, Julia. The company that markets it is going to win big."
"How interesting," NN Core 1 said. "Not many days when we get offered 2 revolutionary partnerships." "You think they're connected?" she asked.
"There's one way to find out, Juliet. Start name-dropping. See how our Clifford reacts."
"Right. This partnership," Julia said laconically. "Let me guess. You provide the data constructs of a rudimentary technology, and Event Horizon develops it to a commercially viable level. Is that the way you see it working, Clifford?"
He raised his hands, putting on a rueful grin. "Goddamn, on the ball or what? After all these years, Julia, I'm still not in your class. Nobody is.
Okay.
Let me lay it straight on the line for you. Event Horizon is one of several possible partners I'm considering. And I'd like it to be you, Julia. I really would. This operation of yours, you leave the Combinates standing. If we can thrash out a deal, make the numbers work, then it's yours. I'll be a sleeping partner, maybe a gate to some military contracts, but essentially, it'll be your field.
This sleeping partner arrangement, I hope that's not intended literally, Clifford.
People like us, Julia, I mean, working close on this deal, spending time together, maybe you'll see more to me than you do now.
But I still have to put in the best bid if I want this new technology you're offering.
Yeah. You've got some stiff competition lining up for a slice of this pie. I'm not hiding that from you. But I'll show you what I'm offering on a confidential basis, and you can decide what sort of offer to make. I'm confident you'll come out tops. You'll understand what this means. You've got the kind of vision the Combinate boards lack. And this needs someone with vision behind it, Julia.
Dear Lord, he makes you want to vomit, NNCore 2 said. So dreary and predictable. This all sounds very familiar, Julia said. Do you think Clifford could be the one Mutazen stole the molecular structuring data from? If they did, then where did he get it from? NNCore 1 asked. Globecast doesn't employ a single physicist.
Oh, yes, they bloody well do, my girl, Philip Evans said. I told you there was something wrong about Globecast bidding to acquire the Musanta labs.
So you did, Grandpa, but they haven't acquired it yet, which means Musanta can't be the source. Did commercial intelligence come up with anything?
Sod all, idle buggers. You hit this Clifford, Juliet. Hit him hard. Make him know he's a cheap nobody.
Behind Clifford Jepson, a couple of umpires had walked out onto the cricket square. They began to set up the wickets.
What's the matter, Clifford? She asked. Hasn't Musanta got the resources to hack the atomic structuring theory? Is that why you've come running to me and the Combinates to build the generator for you?
Motherfuck!
Clifford Jepson gasped. It was all she could do not to laugh. His fall from oily confidence to bewildered fright was classic comedy. The lack of control surprised her, though.
She hadn't been expecting that, not from a trained executive.
Another demonstration that he didn't really have what it took. She could never understand why he carried on the arms trading. In his father's day, it was different. The post-warming world was unstable. Astutely placed arms shipments could quite often shift the balance of power in small countries. But now life had calmed down again. The only people who wanted arms on the black market were the alienated, increasingly bitter and desperate radical political groups. It made Clifford Jepson little more than an extension of the terrorists he served.
How? He demanded. One has contacts.
Not for that. Atomic structuring is the biggest ultra-hush there's ever been.
Not so, apparently.
Squeeze him, Juliet. Go for the slam. You can dictate your own terms now. I never did like the little bugger. Not a patch on his father.
Do you still want to offer me a partnership? She asked.
I'll consider any bid you submit.
Good. Have your office contact Peter Cavendish. I'm sure we can come to some arrangement. I'll be generous, Clifford. The person who delivers the theory for a nuclear force generator to Event Horizon will be a very rich person indeed. I hope it's you, Clifford. I really do. For old time's sake.
My girl,
Philip Evans said smugly.
Ask him about the source, NNCore 2 said. Clifford.
He looked at her, not angry. Wary, though, she thought. A wounded animal, cornered but prepared to fight.
If you provide me with your source,
where you obtained the data from,
I'll offer you 45% royalties, and we'll close the deal this afternoon.
No way, Julia. You want the generator, you deal through me.
As you wish.
She rose to her feet, brushing down her skirt.
Hey, wait! Call Cavendish, you have the number. I'll review what the two of you come up with. If I think it's good enough, I'll thumbprint on the dotted line. If not, your opposition get their big day.
Who are they? Who else is offering this? She gave him a sweet smile.
No way, Clifford,
said with her old Arizona twang. Philip Evans's gusty laughter echoed through her brain. Her cybernetic mind twins projected quiet satisfaction. She left an acutely flummoxed Clifford Jepson on the bench and headed back to the marquee. Her bodyguards closed in to escort her. An end-of-term prankster had fastened a crude bra made out of pillowcases to the top of the flagpole above the school's art and design block. It was flapping slowly in the breeze. The bishop and the governors had been facing it all through the speeches. Julia started to laugh.